Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Exciting edition of The Thought Police. I'm Mike Graham and you are?
Kevin O'Sullivan.
And it's been another thrilling week, Kevin, of news and views and thrills and spills. Prince Harry's back. Who can say that we haven't missed him? I fucking haven't missed him.
I mean, on any normal week, I would say that is the story of the week. It's an astonishing story.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of other stories.
There are a lot of other stories.
We will talk about later.
But we might as well start with Prince Harry.
But let's start with it because... Yeah.
Because he's still here at the moment, isn't he?
Yeah, this is Thursday. He's going out tonight, I think.
To Nigeria.
To Nigeria to meet Meghan for their pretend royal tour.
Yes,
fucking weird.
Absolute collection of weirdos.
They pretend to be a royal tour wankers.
Yeah.
Anyway, make no mistake, this is what Charles did to Harry when Harry flew in on Tuesday night and said, oh, can I see you tomorrow, Dad? Charlie had 2 appointments.
Right.
Oh, no, I'm too busy.
Yeah.
That was... the most astonishing royal snub in history.
Yes.
Ever.
Right.
And to make matters worse, to rub salt into humiliated Harry's wounds, who was said to be disappointed, but in fact was fucking shocked.
Yeah, I bet.
Because Charles is a well-known soft-hearted, soft-tongued.
And I'm sure he thought he could find some way into his affections.
But he could, look, if Charlie wanted to see him, he would have seen him. He didn't want to. But to rub salt into Harry's wounds... That very night when Harry learned his dad wouldn't be able to find time for him, didn't want to see him, the King announced, I am appointing William Commander-in-Chief of the Army Air Corps, which was Harry's fucking regiment.
Yeah.
Harry always wanted to be Commander-in-Chief of that regiment. He served 2 terms, 2 tours in Afghanistan for them, and that... was a dagger into his heart, and that was King Charles closing the fucking door on that ginger whinger prick.
I think that's absolutely right. But also, how could you make him colonel of a regiment if he's only going to be fucking part-time and he's going to live in a foreign country and he's going to swan around doing all sorts of bullshit fucking doing good stuff, which has got nothing to do with being in charge of a regiment?
Yeah, he was never going to get it ever since he stopped. But if you're not in the front-line royals, you don't get regiments of the commanders.
But that's what I'm saying.
Look at Andrew. He lost all of his regiments when he fell from grace.
Yeah.
So he's never going to get it. But the appointment of Harry on that very day when King Charles says, I'm too fucking busy to see you, that was a monarch's message of all time. Now that was, Harry, you've done too much.
Yeah.
I'm drawing the fucking line.
Yeah.
You can fuck off because I have to choose between you and the rest of my family who can't stand the fucking sight of you, as in Camilla, Queen Camilla, who he called the villain of the story, who doesn't want to be in the same bloody postcode as Harry, and William and Kate, who can't stand the fucking sight of him. Mm. Charles had to side with them, and if he'd have seen Harry... he would have pissed the hell out of them, so he didn't do it.
No, and interesting that I thought the way the newspapers covered it was that they put Spencer in the middle of it all, didn't they? Diana's brother, Lord Spencer, and his wife went to the Invictus Games here, sort of, you know, special presentation scenario, whatever, celebration at St. Paul's Cathedral.
Well, it was a Thanksgiving service for the Invictus Games, which we should say is a very good event.
Well, you say that, but I mean, a lot of people don't fucking watch it. I mean, I don't watch it. I don't give a fuck. I mean, I know that people should say, oh, yeah, but these are veterans and they should be nicely looked at. Yeah, you know, good luck to them. In the same way that I don't give a fuck about the Olympics. I'm sorry, it's nothing against disabled people. I don't really watch it. Yeah. I'm just not interested. And I'm not planning to watch the fucking Olympics this summer in Paris either, by the way, because they're going to be fucking woke as fuck.
To be fair, I'm an equal opportunity apathetic person yes. about both the Olympic right. Games and the Paralympic right. Games. I don't watch either. I don't like
track and field.
I don't like athletics. No, much. I don't really get it.
Oh, we used to do it at school in the summer, of course. Right? Now a lot of kids used to play cricket in the summer, but we didn't. We did fucking track and field. I hated it, not because I wasn't particularly quick or it was just boring.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I just thought it was boring. I played football in the winter, which was good. But fucking athletics, I couldn't give a fuck.
I was quite good at athletics. It was quite fast running. Mm. I just found it boring, but I found it even more boring to watch. By the way. That was the last time I got caned at school.
Oh, was it? What, because of sports day?
No. What happened was the school...
Was this the story you told me before about when you were 17? You were like, oh, is he sure?
Yeah. I was about 17 and then the fucking headmaster starts caning me. Right. And after the fourth cane, I went, you do realise I'm 17, don't you? The reason I got the cane was that the school had just had these new tennis courts.
Oh, yeah.
This shining new... Mm. Tarmac with all the paint lines, and it was a very hot day. Right. And it hadn't really set yet, so me and this mate went up to the fourth floor with a fucking great bag of shot puts and chucked them all out the fucking window, so they landed like fucking great craters.
Right. Oh, Jesus.
And it cost the school like about 20,000 quid to do again.
Tell me that was why I was doing.
Yeah,
that's
we got
funny.
In the shit again. But with you on that. But nevertheless. You know, you can't deride an event.
No, I mean, look,
like
he hangs on to it.
Good for the war veterans.
And it's good for the veterans, and I get all that. But what I don't say is that, you know, Harry has done a wonderful thing, because Harry still uses it now.
He does, doesn't
tool.
He? That's
he uses
really
it as a tool.
A device.
Kind of, to make him look nice.
A device to polish good. His fucking hair.
Yeah,
you're right.
Exactly,
you're
exactly right.
Right.
And so he goes, well, how can you criticise me? Because I do this great thing with all these, you know, very injured people.
By the way, but to show how far he's fallen, apart from, you know, prior to this king, the king snub, it took my breath away because, by the way, every royal correspondent, oh, yeah, they will be meeting up.
Yeah.
He will. The king loves his son.
Yeah.
He'll see his son.
He can't turn his back on
you
him.
Know, the royal correspondents, they always get everything wrong. They don't know anything.
Quite a lot of them do, that's true. But
anyway,
also, quite a lot of them have pretty good sources as well.
Yeah, well, they didn't know about this, did they?
Well, no, they didn't. But it's only, the interesting thing as well about how we only found out about it is because, of course, Harry released the information.
Yeah.
Again, it didn't come from the king. It didn't say, look, the king's too busy. It was Harry's people that put out, the king is too busy.
Yeah.
I hope to see him soon.
Yeah. And he was said to be disappointed.
Yes.
He was actually fucking shocked.
I bet he was.
But prior to this, you know, 10 years ago, 2014, when Harry launched the Invictus Games, all the frontline royals turned up. William, Kate, Camilla, a lot of them.
Right.
They all turned up to the Invictus Games, to the opening ceremony, to back Harry.
Yeah.
So he's got this big Thanksgiving service at St Paul's Cathedral yesterday, which was Wednesday here in London. None of them turned up.
Yeah.
None of them.
Right.
Instead... Yeah, you know, you get this gathering, you know, talk about Z-list, Charlie all thought, fuck off.
I know.
You know, that's that best you can do.
Yeah, that's not great, is it? And that's the trouble, because what they have found out, as they will eventually find out all around the world, is that people don't want to be associated with fucking tarnished goods. And I'm afraid that Harry and Meghan are now officially tarnished goods.
Yeah.
Tarnished by Spotify, tarnished by Netflix, even though they've still got, you know, supposedly deals. Tarnished by this fucking useless website that she's launched, which is what? American Riviera Orchard. Who gives a fucking flying fuck?
But
right?
When is anything going to get sold
right.
on American Riviera Orchard? You still can't buy a fucking thing on it. All that seems to have happened is she launches it like about 10 years ago. No, it's at least 6 weeks ago now, isn't it? Or something, nearly 2 months.
Yeah.
Where a stupid video of her standing in a beige kitchen with a beige cushion.
Stirring some old shit up. Right.
All that's happened since then is she sent a few jars of jam to people who didn't want them.
Right. But also, she hasn't sold them. But
sold a fucking thing.
No, the point is that, as we've said before, they're very good at promising to do things and announcing that they're going to do things. They're not
they
very good at actually doing
right.
anything.
They're not any good at doing it.
You remember they were going to do all these podcasts? I think they only did two. They were going to do a fucking series for Netflix. They only did one fucking show and maybe another little bit over here. You know, they've now said that they're going to be launching all these other podcasts and Netflix shows. I bet you any fucking money that it never sees the light of day.
Well, he never ever made a podcast. Megan made 12 called The Archetypes for Spotify, which was so shit and so boring that Spotify axed the contract. He didn't do anything.
Right.
And now,
but he's supposed to be doing a polo show now, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, fucking Netflix, who wants to see that?
Who gives a fuck,
The
right?
Secrets of Polo. The
Secrets of Polo, right.
Polo's a chinless wonder fucking horse sport that no one in the real world gives a flying fuck
and also
about.
Also, no one in the real world understands. I once went to a polo match in fucking Texas. It was when Fergie was around, Duchess of York. You know, she came to Texas to sort of, you know, glad hand around the place. And, you know, it was the usual fucking suspects at this Texas place. Rich fucking millionaires, few Argentinians, a lot of fucking rich Americans.
Yeah, a lot of Argentinians.
A lot of Argentinians that loved it. Fucking, and Fergie was the sort of token royal. But it was the fucking absolute most ridiculous game I've ever seen. Huge field, horses running up and down.
Massive pitch.
A big mallet.
It's really boring, isn't it?
Really boring. And I mean, the only interesting thing was when, you know, you would see somebody charging against somebody else for the ball. It was like, this is the worst game I think I've ever seen.
I mean, I've seen it a couple of times when I was a young reporter a long time ago, when Charlie used to play.
Yeah.
So we used to have to go and watch him play this stupid fucking game. And of course, he always delivered because he always fell off.
Yeah, right.
The thing about Charles was he loved polo, but he was shit at it.
He was shit at it. Well, I think Harry's the same.
Yeah.
Because the last time we saw Harry play in a game, he sort of fell off the horse very awkwardly, off the horse's head.
Yeah.
You know. And people who know about horses go, you don't fall off a horse like that unless you don't know what you're fucking
doing. Yeah, yeah. So it's a shit sport, so no one's going to be interested in that.
I wonder if they're going to try and set up a game in Nigeria. Very unlikely.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, Megan is 43% Nigerian. Yeah. What a coincidence.
I hesitate to say what the rest of her is. 53%.
Yeah, she's 43% Nigerian.
Yeah.
And 57%. Oh, well, let's
say that. That was exactly my first thought. You know, but we don't need to do a fucking deal.
We're not going to say what she's 57%.
But isn't it funny that here they were in the centre of London, and the papers all did it this way, less than 3 miles apart. You know, a big fucking do at Buckingham Palace, 8,000 people for a garden party. Have you ever been to a garden party at Buckingham Palace?
Yeah, I have once. Yeah.
I thought you might have been.
I've never been invited.
What's it like?
I tell you what it is. It's like, so it's the big back garden of the palace. So, by the way, have you ever been in Buckingham Palace?
I don't think I have.
What a shithole.
Is it?
It's fallen apart at the
seams. I remember
scenes.
When Ryan Parry did the whole fucking inside job for the Daily Mirror. And we were all fucking staggered at how shit it was.
It's really crap.
I mean, terrible carpets, really
horrible, horrible, bright, red, vulgar carpets.
And I had a couple of those.
They're all threadbare.
Yeah, a couple of those really bad, sort of 3-bar electric fires.
Yeah. That's right. Now, the Royals.
It's like a tenement in Glasgow.
The Royals always hated it, and you can see why. Yeah. Anyway, the garden parties. What happens is, you know, everybody is stationed there and you get sort of served. Bottle, you know, cheap wine, and stand there, and there's a few nibbles, and then I mean, there's usually I don't know how to estimate it, but I would suggest there's 500 to 1,000 people there, all standing in the spacious garden, and then at a certain point, well, in my day, it was the Queen and Prince Philip appeared, you know, regally from the sort of balcony of the palace, and then they come amongst the people. And they literally sort of geographically tour the entire gardens, talking to people. For, you know, have we come far?
Yeah.
Yes, I have. Well, very nice to see you. And then on to the next people. And they just, that's basically it. So they tour, they go round the garden in about a fucking hour flat. Right. And then people stick around and then they go home.
And then you get told to fuck off.
Yeah. I mean, as a sort of knees up party, it's about a 1 out of 10.
Yes.
But you get the chance to
but
say
it's
hi
one
to
of those
the
things,
king.
I suppose, as well, that you can go, oh, yeah, I've been to a Buckingham Palace garden party.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't invited. I was invited as a representative of the press.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've only been in the company of most of the stuff I've done with the Royals has been in America, you know, whenever they would visit over there.
Yeah,
so I was at the White House when Diana came there. I followed fucking, they used to send me, the News of the World always used to send me with Edward because nobody, they couldn't be bothered sending from London. So I'd go pick up Edward in places like fucking Nova Scotia and go to these drinks receptions. And I remember once standing in this drinks reception line to sort of meet, you know, His Royal Highness Prince Edward. And it was all, you know, where are you from? Oh, I'm from the Halifax Courier. And what about you?
News
I'm
the
from
world.
The Nova Scotia. And I went off to the News of the World. He fucking went pale, you know.
Did
Because I was watching him, and I was convinced, I mean, I may be completely wrong about this, but I was watching him, because women would turn up, you know, in their droves to shake hands with him and all that. And I would watch him sort of shaking hands with all these women, and I never saw any kind of reaction from him at all.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't have an eye for women, it seemed to me.
Interesting.
You know, he was, you know, I'm like...
happily married to Sophie now,
yeah,
of course.
Absolutely right. But I would be like, you know, if that was me, and there's all these kind of young women willing to fucking shake your hand, probably give you a kiss... You would be eyeing them up, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Sorry, well, to sound old fashioned.
Yeah. Maybe use your kind of royal privilege to your own advantage, like exactly. Andy always used
like an old fucking Air Miles Randy Andy did. But there was none of that. He made no eye contact with them. He was very perfunctory. There was nothing going on. You know, first, he wasn't flirting.
Yeah. First rule of royal journalism: no one gives a fuck about Edward. But in the old days, he was always seen as the wanker of the family. Andy.
Well, he's the guy that joined the Marines for 3.5 nanoseconds, right?
Yeah, and then left to take up a showbiz career. Right. Anyway, I was there when you know the famous "It's a Knockout" press conference. When,
oh my God,
when
it's
incredibly,
a
it's what a royal knockout when Fergie and him and Anne took part. Right. They made complete twats of themselves.
Right.
And
this was their attempt to sort of get down with the kids, wasn't it? So that, everyone will really like you if they look as if you're having some kind of
great fun. It was an early bad press move by the palace. They should not have allowed it. It degraded the royal family. They just made absolute arseholes of themselves. Anyway, so we're in this tent waiting for Edward to come and give a press conference. And so it wasn't me, but he starts to move, you know, it was all referring to us as "you lot" and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
So we were firing questions as, you know, which you think is the hardest task ahead, the mini marathon or what?
Mini marathon.
And he went, "Oh, I think the mini marathon is very difficult, blah, 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 blah." And then someone said, "Do you think this is befitting of the royal family? Do you think it's not rather degrading for our royal?" And he stood up and went, "That's typical of you lot! I'm so fed up with your negativity," and stormed out. He hadn't even left the tent as the press corps just erupted into sort of roars of like, "Hey!"
This is it. They've never forgiven us, have they? For not fucking being in awe of them. And for not, I mean, I'll take you back to the couple of stories I've told about some of these politicians, like Heseltine, when I fucking had a go at him when he was in the tent of shame. And he looked at me as if I'd literally shat in his cornflakes. Because people don't talk to them like that. They don't like it. And he's like, "That's a very impertinent thing to say."
Yeah.
And I was like, "Well, it can only be impertinent if you're superior to me, which I don't think you are. So why don't you just answer the fucking question?"
Yeah, I had a bit of an exchange with Lord Linley, David Linley.
Yes, so you've told us about that. Yes,
I mean, some in a way they're victims of their own culture.
But also Harry, everyone makes out, "Oh, Harry's, you know, he's had an ordinary life. You know, he's had girlfriends. He's, you know, been
fucking
in the army. Hasn't had an ordinary life.
He's a
fucking arrogant little piece of shit, like they all are."
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely. But to go back to Harry and Meghan, this is the truth of it. You know, they've created a toxicity that has torn our royal family apart, and it's Meghan's fault.
Yes,
she has spread,
no question.
She has spread poison through that family, and it's sad to see. It really is. It's sad to see in any family, and.
It's
totally irreparable. The damage cannot be repaired except in one way.
Yeah.
And that is
when
they split up.
Right.
If Harry dumps her, when Harry dumps her, or more likely when she dumps him. If they split up and he comes back cap in hand, at that point, because you always have animosity towards your estranged spouse, then he'd probably come back and say to the king,
"But don't you wonder,
Jesus Christ, you were right all along."
I don't dispute what you're saying, but I also wonder whether we've cast her as the villain when in fact it might be him.
I think he
has leaned on her. She's been his crutch. You know, he's had this kind of, you know, weird obsession with his mother.
which of course he's transferred, and he's transferred it onto her, and she's enabled him to be the victim. She said to him, you know, keep suing everyone, you know, keep fucking going after them. It's your mission in life to clean up the British press, you know,
because they're all the press horrible. Media.
But, you know, so she's egged him on, but I wonder if it's all come from
him. Yeah, it's a really good point. I mean, we mustn't exonerate him and say he's turned into a complete pompous prick.
He is
just because of his mendacious wife. Mm. She's had a lot to do with it, but the seeds of his new horrible self clearly were easy to cultivate.
Totally, I think so. Should we talk about the other big story of the week, and that is the complete and utter fuckwittedness of our politicians once more. We saw the ridiculous spectacle of Natalie Elphick, possibly one of the worst politicians in the history of politics, suddenly deciding that she's no longer a right-wing member of the Tory party, but she's decided to be all fucking lefty and join the Labour party.
Yeah, here's the thing, right? So, Natalie Elphick, as you say, you know, sort of slightly right of Attila the Hun.
Yeah, right.
suddenly joins the Labour Party, crosses the floor and joins the Labour Party.
I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah. 2 minutes before Prime Minister's question time.
In a very public way, right?
Exactly 1 week before, 2 minutes before Prime Minister's question time, Tory Dan Poulter crossed the floor as well.
Right.
So
is this going to be a weekly thing now?
Something is going on.
Right.
Now, what's happened, though, what is interesting is there's been such a backlash against the Natalie Elphick.
Yes.
Clearly, I say Dan Poulter and Natalie Elphick were promised peerages by...
See, him. I think if that happens...
That
will be the worst thing to have ever happened.
He can't now.
No.
He can't now. Mm. It's too obvious.
Yeah.
But I bet you this is what will happen. They won't get peerages, but they'll both get very, very well-paid, lucrative sinecures, you know, heading up Keir's policy
unit. Well, apparently she's got a big interest in housing. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Since when?
Since
she took the house off Mr. Elphick, who was put in prison for fucking
since
sexual activities.
Since she joined the party that didn't do nearly enough to build any fucking houses for the migrants that she didn't stop in her constituency of fucking Dover while her fucking husband was getting jailed for sexual offences.
Chasing women around the table in the kitchen. And apparently she's apologised today.
For sticking up for Charlie.
Because her fucking explanation for his activities, which were indeed criminal, she said, oh, well, it's not his fault. He's very attractive to women. And you go, really? Is that the best fucking defence you
could
have?
She'd have to apologise for that. Now, obviously Starmer's made her do that.
Yeah.
But... you know, what I'd say about her is, you and I have discussed this before, because she's the MP for Dover, clearly she's been for the last, you know, as long as she's been an MP, what is it now, 4 or 5 years, whatever, someone we all wanted to interview.
Right.
She's the MP on the front line of the migrant crisis. Could you get her onto the fucking radio? Could you get her onto the TV? Does she give fucking interviews?
Yeah.
She's fucking useless.
Right.
She said no every time.
Yeah.
She could have turned herself into a real political star.
She could have done.
Instead, she didn't have the
wherewithal. She could have been the sort of the touch point, the cultural touch point, because it was Dover, of the fucking problem. She could have said, look, this is where they're all coming in. Because Dover's in a right mess.
Fucking, of course.
You know, they've got such fucking problems with their... social care departments, because they've got all these kids, supposedly, because they count them up to the age of 24, 25. They call them children. They go into care. The care system in Kent, that part of Kent, is completely fucked, because they haven't got enough fucking resources, they haven't got enough people. They're taking these kids and putting them into foster homes, supposedly, and half of them are fucking blokes, grown men, moving into your house, and you've got maybe, you know, a couple of other girls living there. It's a fucking recipe for disaster. She did nothing about any of it.
Yeah, all the people down in Dover, all the other politicians, now the Tories as well, said she was useless.
Yeah.
She really, in that, the position, that, any ambitious politician, that is a dream constituency, given the circumstances.
Yeah.
Instead, what did she do? Write a couple of columns for the Daily Express that nobody fucking reads.
Yeah.
So, thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Useless, good riddance. And it's really backfiring spectacularly
although,
for Keir, isn't it?
Yeah, because, I mean, the one interesting thing that we got out of it, one was Lord Kinnock saying that they should really be a bit more careful about who they invite to join the fucking party. But more interesting, I thought, from Rachel Reeves' point of view, I've never thought was worth a fag end. Apparently she once told him to fuck off.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not a bit of my estimation.
Well, apparently, though, Rachel, who, you know, not against... not much opposition, I think, is one of the more sensible Labour ministers.
She probably is, but she's not up against much. Is
she's
she?
No, she's not. She's,
I mean,
not.
There's not very many sensible. I mean, how many sensible people could you? I think Pat McFadden's all right,
yeah,
because he's from the Blair days, so he knows a bit about how to kind of present himself.
He's okay, but it wasn't he the one that came in strongly to support that bloke Amir Ali or whatever his name was up in
Rochdale,
the Labour guy who turned out to be a rampant.
But the trouble is, again, you don't have to scratch the surface very much. I had some fucking Labour former advisor on last week to say that, you know, oh, well, the thing about the man in Rochdale was, you know, he said some anti-Semitic things, but he's not anti-Semitic.
Yeah, he is.
You go, fuck you. Of course he is.
Yeah,
why did he say it then?
Yeah, he is.
What the fuck are you
talking
about?
I'm so fucking sick of the left. This is what the left keeps saying, and don't fall for it, folks. They go, just because, you know, I don't like Israel's policies, I'm anti-Israel, it doesn't mean to say I'm anti-Semitic.
No.
Being against, being critical of the Israeli state is not the same as hating Jews. Well, you ask Jews.
Yeah.
If they hear that from anyone, Corbyn always came out with that crap, they go, bollocks, you're an anti-Semite.
Yeah, of course.
It's code.
Of course.
The device they use to disguise their anti-Semitism.
Yeah, of course they do. You know, we've all spoken to some of these characters who, when you say to them, well, maybe it'd be better if the Palestinians actually got rid of Hamas themselves then. Why don't they do that? You know, and nobody can answer that question because nobody who's on the side of the Palestinians wants to be seen to be in any way suggesting that Hamas should be done away with by Palestine.
Yeah.
Because they fucking should. Absolutely. That's the bottom line. But let's not talk about that because there's a far more interesting story that I want to tell you about. And that was today on my show when we managed to get a bloke, a namesake of yours on.
Oh, yeah, Kevin O'Sullivan. I heard him.
Did you hear it? And so we thought, well, a bit of a wheeze because we're doing these bloopers now. And I thought, well, I know what we'll do is we'll ask him at the end when he's finished talking about it. Believe it or not, he was actually, I didn't realise until we got him on, he's a fucking guy that defends cyclists. He's a solicitor, but he's called something
like... He's a disgrace to the name.
So I should have given him a fucking going over, but I didn't.
I thought he seemed like a nice guy.
He was actually quite a nice guy. But I said, so, have you ever been mistaken for the,
I know,
debonair, you know, former Fleet Street legend, Kevin O'Sullivan? Expecting him to go, no. And he went, yeah, how much?
But it was to you and me, wasn't it? Some guy phoned his office.
Some fucking guy rang his office and said he thought it was the real Kevin O'Sullivan, I think he said.
Yeah.
And I, again, expecting there to be nothing fucking to go, nowhere to go. I said, well, what message did he send, did he leave? And he said, well, he left his message saying, Kevin O'Sullivan and Mike Graham are the only people in the world that talk sense.
There you go, the thought police.
By the way, amazing.
Yeah, it was great. And here's another Kevin O'Sullivan story for you. For all of you who are old enough to remember Dallas, the TV
set,
J.R. Ewing and all that, it was produced by a company called Lorimar
Productions.
And the boss of Lorimar and the executive producer, the boss of Dallas, what was his name?
It was Aaron Spelling, wasn't
it? Kevin O'Sullivan.
Was it Kevin O'Sullivan?
Kevin O'Sullivan, yeah.
Shit. Was Aaron Spelling the guy that...
Aaron Spelling was Dynasty, as they called it.
No, I see. I never knew that.
Yeah, Kevin O'Sullivan.
That is amazing. Did you ever meet him?
Well, when I was on the Sun years ago, when Dallas was huge, I interviewed Larry Hagman quite a few times.
Yeah.
I was always trying to get an interview with Kevin O'Sullivan.
Right.
So Kelvin McKenzie thought it was a great idea.
Yeah.
Kevin O'Sullivan
interviews Kevin O'Sullivan.
And he was up for it, but it's just one of those things that never came off.
Very funny. Let's talk about Harry Kane and the curse of Harry Kane. Because people are talking about it again today, because last night, of course...
very disappointing.
Anyway, they're fucking in a position to win the game, right? Literally with what? Five minutes to go?
They got VAR, didn't they? Well, they should have had VAR, but they didn't get it.
Bayern Munich playing against Real Madrid. And I was sort of looking at vaguely on my phone because I was doing something else. And I saw their goal, their first goal. And They fucking blew it. They just fucking blew it. Now, you might say it wasn't their fault, but here we are. People are writing about this now. The curse of Harry Kane has now reached epic proportions.
It really was.
Because it's now hit fucking Bayern Munich.
Well, it was a penalty, wasn't it? And the it was an offside.
Yeah.
And Rails scored.
Yeah.
To win the game. And it was a, you know, I don't like VAR much, but it was a definite case of VAR.
Yeah.
It was very, very tight.
Right.
But the ref decided, that wasn't offside, 100%. So right. He didn't blow. And after they've made that decision, you can't go to VAR. Right. So it's a referee's balls up and another night of tragedy for loser Harry. But you know what he said after the first leg?
Yeah.
In Germany, so they drew 2-2.
Right.
And I think if I remember rightly, they got a late equaliser. Yeah. They were very pleased about that. And Harry goes, it's there. We're going to. It's now 0-0. There's everything to play for. It's not really 0-0, Harry. You're going to play away at Real Madrid.
Yes.
That ain't 0-0.
No, exactly. Fucking hell. Anyway, so that's the Champions League. What should we talk about? Trump. Donald Trump.
Ah, I love Donald.
Stormy fucking Daniels, right?
Yeah.
The story is so. Two-faced, if you know what I mean, because she's already on record as saying that she never had an affair
with
him.
She's told that story a thousand times.
She's told the fucking story that she did have an affair. She tells weird shit about what happened in the room that
night.
She spanked him with a copy of Forbes magazine. It's all clearly designed to humiliate.
Right.
She says she passed out. She says he fucked her. You know, it's all over the place. The whole fucking thing is an absolute sharabang of shit.
Yeah, she shouldn't have even been there.
No.
Certainly not. The sexual encounter had nothing to do with the case.
No.
He's charged with business irregularities.
Yeah, well, they're trying to prove that he paid her money, which was not the right way to pay it. It's not an offence to pay
money.
Well,
it was on his account.
Yeah, but it's not an offence to pay hush money.
No, it isn't.
That's fine.
But he didn't write it down, or the allegation is it wasn't written down as that on his account, so he was disguising a transaction that also was seen to interfere with the election. So that means that every fucking politician, you know, who among us have not done bad things, not sexually and otherwise.
I mean, I've never forced anyone to sign an NDA, but plenty of people have.
Yeah, but you know, you don't get politicians standing up and saying, you know, I'd like to be the MP for Dover because the other cunts left.
Yeah, right.
Right off the bat, I want to tell you, I've smoked 17 joints, I used to take heroin, I fucked a girl down the road when my wife didn't know. Right. They don't do that.
Right.
So when they don't do that, is that electoral interference?
No. Of course not.
That's all he's doing. He's trying to cover up something that he's not proud of, mainly because he didn't want his wife to find out. As a politician, you don't want all your dirty linen coming out of hang on the washing line when you're upset. That's not intellectual interference.
Right.
That's like sort of saying, if you try and make yourself look good for an election, that's corruption. Right.
Well, it's called PR, isn't it?
Of course it is.
It's
campaigning.
People hire people like you and I. We've luckily never had to do it, but we know lots of people in our profession who have gone into the business of PR, and a lot of the times they go in to do what they call crisis PR. Yeah. So if you're in the fucking
crisis
shit,
management,
if you're in the shit, you call Kevin O'Sullivan, who knows exactly how Fleet Street works, and tells you how to keep your shit out of the paper. That's not fucking corruption. And if you say, well, it might be worth having a word with that bird that you fucked, and say to her, look, you know, how'd you fancy a nice holiday?
Yeah.
Not to fucking talk about it for a while. It's hardly fucking criminal offence, is it?
Tell you what, though, there's fucking good money in celebrities who don't want bad press.
There is.
Keeping shit out of the paper.
Yeah.
So, remember James Scott used to be able to meet people?
Is that what he's doing?
He's a good old mate of mine. He used to actually work for me at one point.
Yeah, I remember.
We discussed going into the crisis management business, because in those days it was big.
Yeah, right.
And the people doing it were making a fortune. We had a great name for the company.
Yeah.
As in O'Sullivan, O-S, Scott, S-O-S.
Very good.
S-O-S crisis
management. That is good.
But never happened.
Another
of my great ideas.
But listen, I think the reason you go into those kind of places is because you can't do anything else.
Yeah.
You know, and you've literally run out of fucking road. And most of the people that we know that did that was because they couldn't get another job paying the kind of money that they were getting.
Yeah.
So they form a company and there you have it. But, you know...
But Donald Trump, you know... doesn't matter whether you like it. What's interesting about it, I've got a theory about this. There's two things going on with Trump, right? You know this gag order from that more
which he pays no attention
from that
to.
Trump hating
which
judge.
He pays no attention
to. Yeah, but there's a reason for this. So every day the judge says, right, that's another $8,000 fine, right. That's a grand fine.
Yeah.
And then a couple of days ago you can't keep doing this, Mr. Trump. You really can't. You're breaking my gap. He said, if you do it again, I'm going to send you to prison. He walked straight out and did it again.
Yeah.
He didn't even get fined that time. So
because he's pushing their buttons because he can.
Also, he wants to go to prison.
Yeah, right.
If that judge sends it, the judge will not send him to prison because if he sends him to prison, it's next stop, the fucking White
House. Exactly right.
And this Democrat ruse, this lawfare, this is a Democrat attorney from New York in a Democrat city trying to undermine Trump in his campaign against the Democrat Biden, and it is backfiring. Loads and loads of people who don't like Trump and who are not Republicans say they're going to vote for him because quite clearly he's being victimized in a political campaign. And you know, I'll almost certainly be wrong because I usually am, but I've got a prediction here.
Official Kevin O'Sullivan prediction.
It's a suspicion more than a prediction. I have this suspicion that come November, the presidential election, that it might be a landslide for Trump.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, I think it'll probably be close. I don't think it'll be a landslide. And a lot does depend on what happens between now and then. And I just don't see Biden winning. The story of the week for me on the old presidential front was this one from Robert Kennedy. Have you seen that?
Kennedy can't talk properly.
He says that, he says that part of the reason for that is that a bit of his brain is missing. Right, and apparently he got it. You should pay attention to this. Being a pescatarian, he ate some fish apparently in Southeast Asia when he was there. Doesn't say exactly which kind of fish or exactly which country he was in, but apparently
poisonous fish.
It had a fucking worm inside it.
Ow!
The worm fucking burrowed its way into his brain and fucking ate the part of it before it was killed.
But
somehow, so he's saying literally that a bit of his brain is missing. To which I said, well, presumably that means he's going to run for the Democrats. Then.
Because
he'd be more fucking intelligent than Biden.
Yeah, it could be the vice president.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right.
The
what a weird story.
Yeah, but he can't talk properly, can he?
But this is all part of it, apparently.
Yeah.
That he's got a bit of his fucking brain missing.
Did you see, on that score, you're right, I might have to think about this fish thing, because there's a story came out today that Beethoven, famously deaf.
Yes.
Because he loved fish. He ate fish every day.
Well, you're a bit deaf. You are a bit deaf.
That's true, that's actually. Yeah.
Maybe it is all the fish.
Fucking hell, it must be.
It could be.
If so, I'm in the shit.
You are.
You
have to become a proper vegan.
But so he ate fish and he got so much lead in his head that he went fucking deaf.
Deadhead
Beethoven.
Well, that's a good way to finish, I suppose.
And on that note.
On that note, very good. That's who you did there. Next week we'll do Johann Sebastian Bach.
Yeah, yeah. Composer of the week next week will be. I know who the composer of the week will be. We're going to finish on that. You must have seen this story. It's fucking great. So, Sheridan Smith's recent West End disaster.
Yes.
Opening night, which closed. Rufus Wainwright composed the music, and he said the reason the play for up. What did he blame for the reason the play failed? Brexit.
Fucking cunt.
Because he said, absolute wanker. So he said that because we voted Brexit, we've become all insular, and opening night was very much a European type of play.
Yeah.
No, it's not. It was about a fucking New York actress, you dumb fuck.
Right, it was a shit play.
And that's why we couldn't get our heads around this very foreign type of production.
Yeah.
What a fucking tosser.
Rufus Wainwright.
Rufus, go fuck yourself.
Idiot.
Anyway, there you go. Next week's composer of the week will be Tchaikovsky.
Well, more coverage of the arts. Coming soon. We'll see you later.
Sure, fuck off.